Radio City. John Grayson, Rob Ross once again with you to entertain, inform, and otherwise just kind of hang around and talk about stuff. Rob, how's everything in New York?
Oh, not bad. I just enjoyed a weekend of the Mets sweeping the Arizona Diamondbacks while the Dodgers swept the Nationals. The Phillies lost again to the Cardinals. My only minor glitch in that whole moment of glee was seeing the Florida Marlins having a 9-4 lead over the Atlanta Braves, only to lose 10-9 in the bottom of the ninth. So the Mets could have picked up ground even on the Braves today. Be that as it may, it's nice to see them playing with some firepower and some oomph again.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think they're starting to put the whole ugly Matt Harvey thing behind them. The player that they got in exchange for him, Devin Mesoraco, is paying off huge dividends. He had a game-tying home run last night into the fog, shades of the Sabres.
Yes, right. Yeah, against Philly, yeah.
But, it was just a great three-game series, and, I'm very happy about that. But, apart from that, the weather here has been – it's been a weird mix because it's been very warm, and then it's also been incredibly gray and raining, so you can't really gauge how the day is going to turn out. They'll say it's going to rain, you take an umbrella, and it just winds up warm, sunny, humid.
Yeah, where we had the exact opposite yesterday. They told us it was going to be nice and sunny and probably pretty warm, and there was a nice art show that was set up in Belleville, Illinois, not too terribly far away from here, and all of a sudden we got the exact opposite of that, and storms rolled through and it rained all day. So nobody knows what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday at least when they said it was going to rain, and it did. Whereas Thursday and Friday, I brought my umbrella, which makes my bag heavier, and of course, it didn't rain.
Right.
Of course, I prefer it to not rain, but, could you at least be semi-accurate?
Reminds me of those days back in my childhood when AccuWeather says it's going to rain, it's going to rain.
Well, and just remember the days of Tex Antoine and Frank Field, and, you knew that the weathermen were going to be semi-accurate.
That's right. Where's Lloyd Lindsey Young when we need him? Poor guy. And we've got plenty to talk about. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned the Buffalo Sabres in the fog game against Philadelphia back in the playoffs so many, many years ago, back in the Cup Finals, as a matter of fact. But we have plenty of NHL news to talk about. I want to kick off, though, with something in the musical realm, because we've talked before about D.W. Dunphy's project. And, of course, if you haven't read Dunphy's stuff elsewhere on Popdose, go do that. But he also does something called the Co-op Communique, and we're up to volume, is it 4 now?
Yes.
And let's talk some of the background of this and the Co-op Communique and what it is that DW has put together here, because it's a hell of a compilation.
There are a series of compilations via Bandcamp, so of course you can listen to these tracks for free. That's first and foremost. The goal is essentially, if I may, it's to break the stalemate between the audience and distribution channels that can't seem to come together.
Yeah.
What this is it's basically, for this fourth edition, it's 50 songs by 50 artists, and it's trying to bring different artists and completely unknown, unsigned, and in some cases perhaps forgotten, and I'm using that in quotation marks, forgotten artists, and letting people hear them, I'm going to presume, for the first time, and be exposed to some incredibly talented and really forward-thinking bands and individual performers. The whole idea is to kind of cross-pollinate, and it's a labor of love, but it's also, I feel, a very powerful, very focused, very, very open-armed and driven – what's the word I want to say? It's a manner, as I would always look at it in my previous life, as preaching to a gathering of people who didn't know that they wanted this.
Right. And the cool thing about it is that I've always been a fan, and you can tell when you go back into some of our favorite classic albums, no matter what genre you're talking about, you can always tell when something was a jumble of singles that was just sort of jammed together, or a bunch of songs that were sort of jammed together to make an album, and there was no thought given to the order on which they appeared. And you would just listen, and there was like no through line at all, and it just didn't make any sense. And some good bands did that. I mean, I'm not talking about stuff that was just, you know, bargain bin stuff. There have been some great bands who put together some albums and you think of the track listing and go, why was that there? So DW, because he has the musical background and the knowledge that he does, pays a great deal of attention to how these are presented, not just which songs are presented.
Well, here's the thing, and you've completely hit it 100% correctly. Dunphy himself is a musician.
Yep.
And he's on this compilation. And I don't think that's any sense of ego or arrogance. He's incredibly talented. I have several of the things that he's done, and I really enjoy what he does, the way he does it. You know, he's one of those who actually has his own style, his own thing, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I may use his actual words, you know, the primary conceptual driver of the project is the notion of a rising tide lift against all boats. And I think that's a really great way of looking at it. You know, it's the idea on this one in particular, because this one, again, 50 artists,
right.
50 tracks, you know. You know, they went even further than before to get more recognizable names, as well as artists in the first few years of their careers. Everyone's independent, but they've all got varying sizes of fan bases. And again, it's a way of bringing all of these together and to be heard where they may previously hadn't been. And just to give you a couple of the names that are on this, as you may know from before, Mike Indest, D.W. Dunphy, and that wonderful band from Staten Island, The Punchline.
I've heard of those guys.
So have I. And the remarkable thing about this particular one is their offering is a first-time release of a track that I have to admit I'm incredibly proud of. It's our version, and this is the original Punchline lineup, the four-piece. It's our version of the Bongos, the Bulrushes, which is the only other version you should ever listen to besides the Bongos' own. And, you know, compare and contrast, they're both pretty magnificent. And there is a story behind that, and I will tell it because the way it came together is no mean feat. It was our first rehearsal back together after a 3-year hiatus.
Yeah.
It was recorded at the Institute of Audio Research when we went in for the first time to be the guinea pig band, if you will. Chris, our drummer, was an instructor there, and he was also an engineer as well as an administrator. And he said, listen, we can record and rehearse for free. They'll roll the tapes. So how about it? We all agreed. We went in there. It's our first time together, and we look at each other and go, well, what do we remember? What do we know? And I think it may have been either Chris or Mark, our guitar player, who said, how about the Bulrushes? You know, just something to break the ice.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, let's roll the tape and see what happens. This was the first attempt at it. And it turned
and
out
it just,
so well. Yeah.
Yeah, it just nails it. Yep.
We kept it. We did some minor overdubs. The only thing we never got to do is go back in and remix it. Because this was slated to actually be the flip side of what was going to be the second single by The Punchline, Well of Loneliness, which appeared on Co-op Communique number 2. But I've always loved this version of the Bulrushes. I felt like, you know, it was a song that was always personal to me, but this became more of a part of me than it had been previously. And that's in all deference and love and appreciation to not just Richard Barone, but Rob Norris and, of course, Frank Giannini, the Bongos.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's for me, it's really warming and heartening to know that this will finally be out there. Hopefully people will enjoy it. But more importantly, people will enjoy Volume 4. 50 tracks are a lot to digest and really take in, and I'm sure there's going to be more than enough to take to heart.
Yeah, good deal. And so if people are looking for it, where do we find the Co-op Communique?
You just look it up on the on Bandcamp. Under Co-op Communique is one word, .bandcamp.com. And then, you know, if you type out the whole thing, the Co-op Communique Volume 3 or Volume 4. You know, there's also Volume 3 was the demos one, and I think Volume 2 is still up there as well. If anybody wants, you can obviously reach me at Popdose, and I'll be more than happy to give you the information you need.
Excellent. And again, well done to D.W. Dunphy for once again bringing a lot of these bands and a lot of this music to the fore that most of us wouldn't. It's not a matter of not being able, you know, not having the desire to find it. We just wouldn't be able to get it were it not for his efforts. So,
if I may offer more of a teaser, here's some of the other names on there. How about Gretchen's Wheel and our own brethren, Ken Shane?
Oh, nice.
You know, I mean, come on, this is something. Yep. This is real something. So again, you're going to have a lot of fun listening to this.
Good deal. All right. So go check that one out. And we've got so much more to talk about when it comes to the news. I do want to give a little bit of a teaser for our In Our Head segment, which will come up way at the end, because this time around, we're going to kind of go away from music just a little bit and talk more about personalities because of a get together I had with an old friend who happens to have gotten, he's gone and gotten himself very famous for being a funny man. So we'll tell you about that later on, and we'll get into the In Our Head segment of the show. But before we do that, let's get into this, because it's so completely heart-wrenching to once again realize that you and I, after not even, what, a couple of months worth of hiatus, I guess, if you can look at it that way, are back again and back having to talk about another tragedy, another shooting, another school where now 10 people, 9 students and 1 teacher are dead. Because somebody walked in with a gun, or 2 guns in this case, and shot the place up. And again, we're hearing exactly the same things. And Rob, before we get into the details on this, if we can pull one bit of heartening information out of this, it's the fact that when the people in power, and I'm talking specifically here about the lieutenant governor of the state of Texas, a congressman out of the state of Texas, and of course Senator Ted Cruz, when they say stupid things, people are not giving them any leeway this time. I have seen so many people jumping on these guys and saying, no, we're not going to take your bullshit anymore. It's time for that to stop. Let's get on with this and talk about what needs to be done.
Well, it's like you said, we had a hiatus, and now it's back to another body count.
Yep.
Another round of thoughts and prayers. You know what? Take your thoughts and prayers and shove them up your collective asses.
Yep.
I'm not saying that to be facetious. You know, you know how we've talked about political fatigue? This is probably the most fatiguing thing of all, because it's emotionally draining. It preys upon all our minds, because those who have children can't send them to school without fear. You know, people can't go to their offices without fear. You know, this is a fear factor like we've never seen before.
Yep.
I don't think anybody's thinking about, quote, terrorists as much as they are thinking about some lunatic with a gun. You know, and if I have to hear any more about, oh, this kid was bullied, okay, suck it up, Nancy boy. That doesn't mean pull out a couple of guns and start shooting people.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to hear that. Goes right back then to the parents, you know, who have a kid who can't cope with anything. And they're certainly not doing their jobs, paying attention, listening. You know, were there warning signs? Was there some kind of inkling that he might do something very, very damaging? It's the same conversation we've had before. Nothing's going to change.
Right.
And if anybody thinks otherwise, they're sadly delusional. And don't tell me, oh, we're going to vote them out in November. That's really not going to do anything. Because first of all, you're not going to get the votes you think you're going to get.
Right.
It's all a pipe dream. There has to be some kind of, I hate to say it, physical action.
Well, and not to jump topics here for too long, because there is a connection back to this, but you look at what happened with the confirmation of the new CIA director, who everybody knows is a piece of shit. And what happened? Well, you had a bunch of Democrats who sold out, voted to confirm her anyway, because they're up for re-election in red state and red districts come November. So they're going to protect their collective asses. You don't think the same thing is true when the NRA money starts rolling in on the Democratic side? Which, by the way, there's plenty of them already take it. So yeah, voting the rascals out is going to do you no good at all, because all you have are people who are going to come in and have the same craven attitude about their jobs as these assholes do.
Well, who is one of the biggest supporters of the NRA on the quote left side? Oh yeah, their messiah, Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, right? Exactly. And so therein lies the problem.
I don't want to hear it anymore. You know, I'm not being callous. I'm not being heartless or thoughtless. Do something about it.
Yep.
Actually do something about it. I'm going to say it until I'm blue in the face. Newtown changed nothing.
No.
That right there should have been the very last straw, but it wasn't.
Right. And what's it going to take? More 5-year-olds? Because eventually we will get around to that again. And as unfortunate a thing as that is, unless somebody does something about it, that's where we're headed with this whole thing. And when you have this many people who are willing to stand up in front of a camera. I mean, the first one I heard was this idiot, what's his name, Randy something, who's a congressman from that district in Texas. And he stood up on CNN, he was on the phone doing an interview, and he said, well, these kids need to be taught, if you see something, say something. Shut up. Just don't. I mean, come on. Now that's taken the place of thoughts and prayers in, we're not going to do anything about this. We'll just deflect until the next one. Now we're back to, if you see something, say something. What exactly were they supposed to say? And by the way, how is it that when they do say, hey, there's a guy at the door with a gun, that somebody's going to stop him? It seems to me it's a little too late by that point.
And wasn't the asshole who said, if they had less doors?
That was the lieutenant governor.
Yeah. Good. That's great. You know, there are a lot of really good, decent, genuinely caring people in Texas.
Oh, sure.
You represent them and you make everyone in Texas look bad.
Well, not only that, we're back to video games. They're blaming video games. And the thing is, everywhere in the world has video games. Everywhere in the world has schools that have lots of doors and windows in them. Everywhere in the world has everything that we have except one thing. There's only one major difference between them and us. And that difference is we don't give a crap who we sell guns to, and they do.
You know, the other thing is that really is irritating to me is that they're trying to levy this all on, you know, oh, he's a supporter of Donald Trump and blah, blah, blah. No, no, no.
Who cares?
Right. This kid's a psychotic. Oh, all right. That's all there was to it. You know, going back to what I was saying about being bullied, I was bullied in school. I didn't turn into a psychotic.
Right.
You know, my revenge was basically having a great life and meeting them all on their road to mediocrity. You know?
It doesn't suck, does it? But yeah.
No.
Yeah. It, I mean,
this is ridiculous that we have to have this conversation. You know, I could say we can eschew the whole thing, but then we wouldn't be doing our job the way we've always gone about doing it, whether it was Overnight America or Radio City. You know, we have to talk about these things. And you and I both know that we're sick to death of talking about it because everybody talks about it as a cause celeb moment, except for when something like a royal wedding happens, because I've noticed there are more people talking about that than they are about this.
Yes.
And now, explain that to me. Got away from England in 1776, and yet everybody suddenly gets a major hard-on and shoots on the day of a royal wedding. Who cares? Meghan Markle. Ooh, she's some actress from a TV show on USA Network. Whoop-de-damn-do.
Well, and what's been the one question that every person on the news has asked every Brit and every analyst they can? Well, do you think Meghan Markle's going to change the royal family? Who gives a shit? If they change, it doesn't mean anything. If they don't change, it doesn't mean anything.
You know, I love the hypocrisy of this nation. Wringing their hands and, oh, gun control, gun control, gun control. Oh, royal wedding tomorrow. Doesn't she look beautiful?
Yeah, right.
It's collective AADD. I swear to God.
Yeah, and I don't get it either. I mean, why anybody would put together a party here to watch? And I did hear one interesting theorem that was floated the other day about that. And I wish I could give credit, but I don't remember who it was that said it. But effectively, it was, we really want that. We really want a royal family. We really want somebody that we can put. I mean, what did they call the Kennedys? Camelot, right? So,
okay, then you've got the guy. I mean, he's in office now because he's trying to be a dictator and a king.
Yeah.
I mean, what else are you going to call it? Call a spade,
right?
You know?
And that's it. Well, they did the same thing with Reagan. I mean, there was a parody spot that they did during, I guess it was Reagan's first term, and they were getting ready for the re-election in 1984, or the election of 1984, and not necessarily the news on HBO did a parody spot that was like a campaign ad for Reagan, and it was talking about how great Walter Mondale was, and then the tagline on the spot was, make Mondale president, make Reagan king. You know, and it was there at that time. They knew what we really desperately want is exactly what we fought the Revolutionary War to get away from, a monarch.
Well, all I can say is everyone who stopped thinking about what was important and stopped talking about what was important not 24 hours previously should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
So for all these leftist hypocrites take your virtue signaling and shove it up your collective asses. I don't want to hear a word out of any of you because you're all a bunch of fucking hypocrites.
Right. Well, you know, at least we've got the lawyers to save us.
Speaking of lawyers, because, you know, we had this conversation last week and it's continuing now. You know, you heard about this fella in New York who decided he was a little bit miffed at an immigrant worker behind the counter of a salad joint.
Speaking Spanish.
Correct.
Yep.
And this fellow who was told, hey, you're being recorded, looks at the camera and smiles and keeps ranting and raving away.
Right.
First order of business that I want to take care of going into what you and I were talking about last week was, you're a lawyer, and from your last name, I gather you're a Jew.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Stop it! Fucking stop it, okay? I am tired of hearing people talk about all sorts of very thinly veiled anti-Semitic shit, and it always comes up with the lawyers being brought into it.
Right.
Such as this person. You know, this guy just deserves a kick in the ass.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. And he got it. I thought the best reaction that anybody had was they went on his Yelp page and reviewed him as if he was a Mexican restaurant.
Yes. And he got torched on his Facebook page. And now I guess the latest on this is that his office park is kicking his ass out.
His office locked him out. He is not allowed in the building. And yesterday, a street party with taco trucks and a mariachi band. We're out in full force.
That is a now, touchdown.
I have to tip my hat to that. That's clever. It's brilliant. It's funny in light of something that's tedious and tiresome.
Right. You know? And it's relatively harmless. So through humor and through intelligence and cleverness, they got done what anybody could stand up there and scream at him about. But all that's going to end up with is more noise. So well done, New York.
Right. I mean, you know, instead of having all the social justice warriors on Facebook or social media justice warriors going, oh, he's a piece of shit. They should get rid of him. Shut the fuck up.
Exactly. And yeah, he is. But, you know, again, shouting that from the rooftops, what good is that going to do you? And so, yeah, I mean, eventually, and that's what I mean when I was talking earlier about the fact that the more politicians that stand up and say stupid crap after things like the shooting happen, the fewer people are standing for it anymore. The fewer people are standing for, and the ultimate irony in this case of this schmuck lawyer in New York is that while he's sitting there ranting and raving about customers who are speaking back and forth with the person behind the counter in Spanish, everybody there was speaking Spanish. And he's going nuts about this. What does he have on the sign and on his website for his legal practice? Se habla español.
Right,
really? Really? So yeah, you have as advertised the very same thing that you're pissed off about.
I'm wondering if we're ever going to get out of this terminal state of Mercury retrograde I think we're in.
Well,
because it seems like it's a 2-year hangover already of it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, the again, fairly common theme you're hearing people talk about, well, these idiots feel emboldened now after the election, after Charlottesville, after everything else, that the schmucks who used to sit in the corner and bitch to each other about this kind of stuff are now feeling empowered to go out in the open with it. And there was something that happened right here in town. Waterloo, Illinois. I live in the St. Louis area, and I work in St. Louis City. But Waterloo, Illinois is where I call home. And it's a small town across the river and south a little bit from the city of St. Louis. And it is very white. Very German, oddly enough. It seems to be where all the German immigrants, came, whatever, you know, something happened. But there's only about 10,000, 11,000 people in town. So in town is a Mexican restaurant. In fact, there are two of them. But one of them is more recent and opened up in what had been the old Dairy Queen building. And there's a point to this story. So they got a little big for that building because they were very successful. It's a great restaurant. This food is inexpensive and very well made. So it became really popular. There's always a line there. So they decided to expand the building a little bit, do some renovations, do some work on it. Well, as it happens, there's a guy that lives a couple of blocks down from the restaurant who is a St. Louis City police officer. He's a lieutenant, as a matter of fact, and he happens to live here in Waterloo, a couple of blocks away from Romero's Mexican restaurant. So he took to Twitter the other day while he was driving by, I guess, and happened to notice the work that was being done and said, "What the hell is this country coming to when there's a bunch of contractors out doing manual labor on a restaurant that's owned by Mexicans? White guys." So he was pissed off that there's white guy contractors doing manual labor for a Mexican. Really? You know, and this is a cop saying this, and he thought it was funny.
I'm telling you. Well, first of all, let me ask you something about this town with all these Germans. When did they come here? After World War II? I'm just saying. Yeah. If you're out there, I'm just going to tell you right now, keep your head low and do not wear a yarmulke.
Yeah, no kidding. But no, I think it had actually predated that. But
oh, please. They're all a bunch of Jew haters.
So that's what's going on here in town. But it just goes to show that, you know, everywhere, this kind of thing, for whatever reason, whether it's Donald Trump's fault or whether he was a symptom of the disease, there is a backlash, and it's happening. It continues to happen, and people feel like now is the time to be able to air this shit in public. The good part about that is at least we'll know who and where they are.
The problem also with that, though, is that it balances out with an equal amount of shitheads on the left side.
Right.
You know, I'm not defending the right, but, you know, there's a lot of bad hombres out there in the parlance of the whole conversation. A lot of bad hombres on both sides.
Right.
You know, so it allows equally unsavory assholes to be emboldened, because somehow they'll take something like this and make it a thing about the Palestinians, as they tend to do. Case in point, when they did that with the Eric Garner thing, what Eric Garner's death at the hands of police had to do with the Palestinians, your guess is as good as mine. But this is what happens with the assholes on the left. So we are in such an untenable no-win situation right now.
Right.
I fervently wish that The Walking Dead would come true and zombies would eat 90% of everyone out there.
Yeah, and as far as that, you know, the serious side of the news goes for this week, the other thing we have to talk about, because again, it's back in the news, is there is even more control coming. And you talked about the hypocrisy on the left. When you look at the reactions to the Me Too movement and how this is all starting to play out, and we warned about a little bit of this last time around, and it's starting to come to fruition, because there's a constant drumbeat on the left about the right and the fact that they will believe anything as long as it backs up their viewpoint. And I saw some of that play out after the shooting took place the other day, where people were saying, we found a website that had this kid wearing a Hillary hat. Of course, it had been mocked up and it was bullshit anyway. But they love believing that stuff without any evidence to back it up. Same thing as Donald Trump saying, there were FBI spies in my campaign. Really? Where's the evidence of that? Well, I don't have any, but I know they were there. And so what do we have on the left? People saying the exact same thing about the Me Too movement. And without any evidence to support the claim, they automatically gravitate toward believing the accuser instead of believing the accused. So innocent until proven guilty doesn't mean anything when it comes to ruining somebody's life with something like the Me Too movement.
Right. Well, when we talked about it and the way you had framed it when you brought it up, it made me really sit and think about it, because I'd already been in a froth about it to begin with, because I don't like this kind of thing. The blind accusations, the going against the whole notion of the law that, you know, innocent until proven guilty.
Yep.
In a case where it's based around hearsay for all intents and purposes. But I don't remember what specific case was brought up, but I saw this on a Facebook thread. And of course, Facebook means absolutely nothing, but it certainly inflames me with anger because of the stupid, mindless, very, very unidimensional viewpoints that you come up with. And there was talk of this sexual harassment case that had gone down and that the accused was in fact exonerated because the person who did the accusing actually lied.
Right.
And the response of one of the people was, but as always, I'm inclined to believe the accuser. which it was the exact thing you had brought up, put into one encapsulated, you know, paraphrase from a sentence.
Yeah. And, you know, granted, with Cosby and with, the movie producer, Weinstein, and, there were five or six of them. And now Bill Maher was talking about this on his show this week as well. The fact that Hugh Hefner died at exactly the right time because the bombshell was about to drop on him within a week of his death. And now nobody talks about it because he's already dead. What are you going to do to him? So with all of those guys, there was an incredible amount of evidence. There was a huge pile of evidence that they had actually done something. It wasn't just an accusation. It wasn't even just the fact that there were 12 or 60 accusations. There was evidence to support the fact that they had done this stuff. And if that's the case, great. Let's move forward. But if it isn't, to say you automatically believe one side or the other is just fallacy. The Crucible doesn't care which side you came from. The lesson is the same.
The problem is no one seems to understand the most simple of all concepts. The law is the law.
Right.
Let's work this through by the letter of the law, and let's put it through the system the way it's supposed to be put through the system. Because those kinds of cases, again, are 99% built around hearsay. You know, this is not like, you and I are walking down a street. You and I have an argument. I shoot you.
Right.
Not because you're a Jew. Don't worry. it's not a hate crime. But I'm caught with the gun red-handed standing over your dead body. Those are cut and dried. That you have to go through the whole process. That to me is kind of a waste of time. Gun, hand, body. End of story. Bye-bye. But no one ever wants to go through the process to let the system work the right way.
Right.
They just never do. And the Me Too movement has just blown things into such bad proportions that it's steamrolling its way into having what's – I'm predicting the more you hear about these rape cases or sexual harassment cases, the more, as you pointed out, someone's going to be lying about it. They're going to try and destroy somebody, if not outright destroy them. And it's going to backfire completely, and all credibility from that point forward, it'll be back to the way it used to be, where you hear about a woman saying, "I've been raped" or "I've been sexually harassed." Really?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
She was
right.
A raised eyebrow of doubt and skepticism.
Yeah, just like that other lady was, right? Sure you were. And that's the real danger in all of this. And it would be fine if people weren't vindictive assholes, and people are, not all of us, granted, right. but they're out there, and all you need is one person who's pissed off enough at somebody else, whether it's over a divorce or whatever, it doesn't make any difference. All you need is one person to go there and say, you know what, I've figured out the way to really get you in a way that you can't recover from, and so I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger. All it takes is one person without a conscience. You ever met anybody without a conscience? I sure have.
Yeah.
So, I have. Uh-huh. Yeah, so just watch out for it.
Exactly. And people wonder if I'm a misanthrope or if I am a misanthrope, and this is a very easy reason for me to justify it, and you can't really argue it. I'm not saying you can't argue with me about it. You can't argue it. Look around you. Step back and look around in the most, and I know this is a stretch, most objective way possible, and listen to the way people talk at one another, not to one another. People on the left are condescending, patronizing, downright rude. People on the right are stubborn, unidimensional and a one-track mind, about they're inflexible about anything. But the vindictiveness that comes out of everyone on the left right now, it's hard to discount that.
Right. Well, and we get blinded by things a lot. And this actually gets into another story that we wanted to bring up, because we have humanity is involved in this idea that everything is permanent and yet nothing really matters. And that gets into a lot of really kind of wide open philosophical headspace. But when it really comes down to it, everything that happens to you during your life is intensely personal. And there was a story that we talked about a little bit last time around about a guy, because of some of the reactions to it, who at 105 years old decided that he was done fighting. He was in constant pain and flew overseas. And you're going to have to remind me where he went because I don't remember. But to do doctor-assisted suicide. You had more that you wanted to expound on this one as well, because all we could focus on was, why would somebody at that age commit suicide? How long did he have left? Well, if you're not him, it doesn't make any difference what you think about it.
It's the story of Dr. David Goodall. He was an Australian scientist. He was a father, grandfather, great-grandfather. He, you know, at 104 years old, he was by himself. He could not move. You know, his mind worked fine, but his body was deteriorating. He actually didn't have a terminal illness, but it was, I hate to say it, natural deterioration.
Yep.
He couldn't do anything anymore, period. You know, he just could sit. He'd wake up and sit, and that was it. And he didn't want to live anymore. All his friends were gone. His wife was gone. You know, he wanted to go out the way he lived, with dignity. You know, so he flew to Switzerland.
That's right.
Listened to Beethoven. His friends and what friends he had left and family left were there, and he flipped the switch. And that was it. A quiet, dignified death. And I don't want to say by his own hand, but of his choosing. And I believe that everyone, if they're ill, they have the right to make that choice. Because God knows, if I had some kind of disease, now let alone the fact that he was 104 years old,
right,
and had lived a full life, in his own words, he goes, I have nothing to live for. Why do I want to prolong this? That's a rational decision, you know?
Yeah.
And then let's not, you know, go with, well, he was a scientist. That's irrelevant.
It's his decision. I mean, period. It's just, it's his thing.
Rationality and dignity are a very strong duo, you know?
Right.
And for him to make that decision, who is anybody to sit in judgment of him? He made that choice of his own volition, of his own free will, and he did it, you know, and wish him a safe journey, and be happy of the fact that he went out on his own terms. When people are forced to suffer with diseases that destroy them, that eat away at them, and the domino effect is it eats away at and destroys their family in the process because you're watching someone you love die.
Yeah.
That's an act of cruelty. How dare you levy that against somebody else?
Right. And you know, getting back again to that philosophical space, everything is transient. And the case could be made, nothing matters. It doesn't make any difference to anybody except him. And if his experience is over with and he decides it's done, then it's done. And it shouldn't make any difference to anybody else. I mean, you think of how many things on a grand scale, not just one life, not just one person and one viewpoint, but how many things on a grand scale were so important during just our lifetime that were so devastatingly important, and they were on the front page every day, like when they put Playboy in brown paper bags behind the counter at the Circle K or the 7-Eleven, how important that was, and how important it was that they slapped warning labels and tipper stickers on albums, and how important it was that, you know, item after item after item after item, and now we don't even think about them because it wasn't important and it didn't fucking matter. So, you know, now we are where we are. Life changes, things move on, things progress, and one day they're going to progress without you and without me. So what the hell are we fighting about?
Right. But the thing is, people don't see it that way.
Right.
Because now we're living in a time where everybody thinks that they have a voice that needs to be heard because they're right and you're wrong.
Yeah. You know? But whether they see it that way or not, see, one of my favorite quotes is Neil deGrasse Tyson, who said the facts don't give a shit if you believe them or not. Whether they think it's true doesn't make any difference. One day the world will, in fact, go on without them.
Well, that unfortunately happens to hold very true with the press.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Right. Oh, man. I don't know why everybody can't be a lot more zen about everything. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, it's Deceptive Dave Clark who did it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Central Park 5, Sam. Dave Clark 5. It, you know, they sound the same to me. I just couldn't keep them straight. let's talk hockey. I can't anymore with this stuff. Let's talk hockey, because this, the one bright spot this week for us has been the fact that we saw a brilliant turnaround so far. You know, it's still going on, but in the Tampa Bay series, the Lightning went down 2-0 to Washington and looked pathetic and lethargic and like they were being smacked around and bullied during those first two games and dropped them at home. And since then, since you and I talked last, they have won 3 games in a row now and are on the doorstep of going to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Well, you and I talked about it, and you said it quite right, that they had, that Tampa Bay expected Washington to play down to the finesse level that they play at, but instead Washington brought a very physical game. Somehow they must have heard that because they got Washington to play the finesse game that they were beaten at.
Right.
Quite handily. So it's a magnificent turnaround by Tampa Bay. And look, if they go to the finals and they win the Stanley Cup, I would not be sad, because it would mean that Ryan Callahan, Dan Girardi, Ryan McDonough, JT Miller, they all get to raise the cup. Even though they aren't with the New York Rangers any longer, they deserved that cup in 2014 when they were all still there.
Yep.
That's first of all. But now, this afternoon, shockingly, or maybe not so shockingly, history was made, because the Las Vegas Golden Knights in their maiden season are going to the Stanley Cup Finals, having beaten the Winnipeg Jets 4-1. This afternoon's win, 3-2, was in Winnipeg. And that is, that's history.
It is. Well, and you got to realize that Winnipeg was riding a huge high. They were not supposed to beat Nashville, and they went in there, and not only did they beat them convincingly. So to come out of that, and they were riding high and ready to go show these expansion guys what life was really like in the NHL, and what do? They lost 4-1. And how about Vegas again, with very few stars, with very, I mean, they're not a frontline team. Marc-Andre Fleury, by the way, has been playing the best hockey I have seen him play in years, since probably his second year with Pittsburgh.
I'll tell you what, I think that's part of it. Seeing Pittsburgh go out and him going to the finals, that's a really big fuck you.
Yeah.
You fuck me.
Yes.
And here's where we're at now. But, you know, you got Marc-Andre Fleury and you've got James Neal, and those are two pretty good marquee names for an expansion team. But
right.
I give full credit to the coaching staff for getting that team to play the way that they have played.
Yeah.
Because how else are you going to get an expansion team to gel like that?
Right.
Can you recall any other expansion team in any sports in history that are going to the championship finals?
Oh, I know. And I'm going to sound like a cliche machine here for a second, so bear with me on this. But really, what has impressed me, because I had watched some of Las Vegas through the season, but I didn't really think that much of them, so I didn't think that we were going to be talking about this now. But this series specifically, it has been the fundamentals that have impressed me the most about that team. Tape-to-tape passing, being in the right place at the right time. I've never... chasing, you know, never ending up and putting yourself in a situation where you know you're going to have to, where you could conceivably wind up chasing somebody and watching the back of somebody's jersey head down the ice the other way. They are, I don't recall, even on plays where they got scored on, seeing anybody in the wrong place.
And nobody panicked either.
Right.
You know, it's interesting, that first game that they lost to Winnipeg, after that they beat them 4 straight.
Yeah, right.
Pure and simple.
And it's fundamental hockey. I mean, you watch the way, I mean, I don't know, I haven't even looked up the numbers on their power play, but you watch the cycle on their power play, it is textbook. You couldn't write it up any better than that.
It's going to be a very, very interesting and a very intense finals.
No matter what happens with Tampa, yeah, right.
Right, but you know what? I mean, certainly I would like to see Tampa win, not just for your sake and for the sake of the ex-Rangers. I just never want to see Alex Ovechkin hoist a cup.
Yeah, right. Well, just remember, you can't spell collapse without C-A-P-S. So, yeah, it is going to be fun. And the other thing is, with Tampa Bay, I think what they discovered, and we'll have to see if this holds true in either Game 6 or, if necessary, Game 7, is that the way that you stop Washington from being able to outmuscle you is you score early. And in the games where they've done that, where they've been able to come right out of the gates, and hell, I mean, the last game they did, first period and second period, they scored within a minute into each period. They just came right out and scored. And if you get them, you're trying to come at you from behind, they can't do that with physicality. You've got to do that and be able to put the puck in the net. And that's where Washington struggles.
But with or without Ovechkin, over the years, you watch Washington, especially in the playoffs, the minute that they're down, they wind up on their heels and they don't recover well.
Right, exactly.
If they don't come out of the chute strong and hard and score on you early, they're going to go. The Rangers have proven that time and time and time again against them.
Yep. Yeah, so this is going to be a fun one to watch the rest of. And I'm trying to remember, I guess this game would be played in Washington. The next game, game six, would be played in Washington. And then if necessary, they're back in Tampa Bay for game seven. But I don't know that it's going to take that. I think it's all going to come down to who scores that first goal.
The first two games were played in what, Tampa or in Washington?
In Tampa. So they played two in Tampa, two in Washington, and then they just played.
They played in Tampa yesterday.
Right.
So this is in Washington.
I think so, yeah.
That's how it should go, yeah.
Fun one. So.
Game seven would have to go back, okay?
Can't wait till we get to the finals. I just can't wait.
We're going to have a blast with this next part of the country. Because it will be Stanley Cup finals next week.
Yeah. It's about time, too. Got a couple more things to get to before we get to the In Our Head segment and back to new music, because once again, we have a debut album out to talk about from Arkansas Dave.
Yeah, he's this fellow who's Austin-based, even though he was Arkansas-raised. He's a multi-instrumentalist who plays most of the instruments himself on this record.
Yeah.
The funny thing about it was, and I got to be honest, that when I first put it on, from the opening notes, I thought, is this some Molly Hatchet record? Because it just had that kind of Southern rock flirting with disaster kind of balls out bombast.
Yep.
But then horns come in and backing vocals and keyboards, and suddenly it's this brassy thing that made me go, hey, this is pretty good. And what he has is a really healthy mix of that good old-fashioned sound of soul and gospel with kind of the rock feel and country all mixed into a very nice thick stew that works really well. And where was it recorded? Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals.
There you go. Got to go back to where the Swampers came from. And yeah, and that kind of vibe of being able to put together several different styles of music is something that I think has been missing for a long time. Everything has been a sort of third or fourth generation derivative. But when you've got somebody who is steeped in all of that stuff from childhood and really understands the background of music like that, you can tell the difference.
Well, it doesn't hurt that some of the guys who played on this record are the Swampers.
Oh, nice. There you go.
That's kind of the whole thing. But I'll give you a couple of examples of some of the tracks, how they diversify. Like I said, the first track, Bad at Being Good, which definitely sounds like it's a, Charlie Daniels Band, Molly Hatchet, Black Oak, Arkansas kind of thing. But again, it's got that kind of ballsy, punchy horns. Like, I hate to say, like, everybody have a good time kind of song.
Yeah.
I
don't want to stay the same.
Takes it from that, oh boy, here comes a bunch of cliches, and saves it from it. But then it goes into a song called On My Way, which is just modern blues with a little bit of soul, just to give it some oomph, instead of it being slow and kind of plodding as blues tracks can sometimes be. Flip that around, and Think Too Much is one of those really stonesy kind of, definitely has a feel of Muscle Shoals to it.
'Cause I know, Lord, I don't know.
He makes the sounds of the songs work for the songs. And I think that's what makes this a really good and strong and interesting collection of tunes. It's a really, really good debut. You know, there's a track called Jubilee, which my first listen was, wow, this reminds me a lot of Thorn in My Pride.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there you go. More Southern, you know, Southern Harmony and Companion. but the best track for me was something called Something For Me, and it comes straight out of the Otis Redding book, you know? And it's got that kind of 1-2 horn punch that would have made, you know, Andrew Love and Wayne Jackson very proud. It has that sound that, you know how the Memphis horns always had a very sympathetic feel?
Yeah.
Especially when it got mournful sounding. That's what this song has. So I tip my hat to this young man. It's a fine, fine debut.
Excellent. And a full album, too, not just an EP release.
Right, right.
Good deal. All right. So Arkansas Dave, congratulations, man. And we'll look forward to hearing more from you in the fairly near future. There's somebody to watch for touring as well.
Yes.
Excellent. So one to check out, and that's out from Arkansas Dave, self-titled new album from him. And we have one more thing to talk about before we get to In Our Heads, and it takes us into something that's been going on Facebook. You and I both got caught up with this, but I didn't have the patience for it, so I did all mine at once. But what's going on that's caught your attention?
Well, it was a very fun exercise that I don't know why some people – this is one of the things that I will enjoy, you know, in a Facebook moment. You know, and people love to bitch and moan about, why are they doing this, and I don't feel like that. You know what? Everybody's got their thing. Somebody put up the pick the 10 most influential and impactful albums in your life, whether you listen to them currently or not, or if they're in fact still on your regular playlist. Nothing needs to be said, just the cover.
Yep.
And I took to it, you know, and I had a field day with it because I went, of course, as many people do, I did albums 10 through 1 for the 10 days. And then for another 20 days, I did 11 through 30.
Yeah, see, that's the problem is you and I can't keep it to just 10 albums.
Yeah, but nobody can. You know?
Yeah.
People are on like day 60 now, you know?
Right.
It's a fun exercise because it just makes you go back, especially when you hear the comments of others. And I think the album that got the most responses of everyone was in fact my number one choice, Revolver.
Yeah.
I think that got the most. I think number one record, which was number three, got the second most amount, followed by number two, which was the Who Sellout, and that got the third most amount of reaction. But the fact was all of them got very strong, high-numbered reactions. And it was nice to see some of the people who were involved with some of these records have something to say about them as well.
Yeah.
You know, case in point, I put up the first Dirty Looks album in there, and sure enough, there was the wonderful Peter Parker, who, you know, had his, you know, his seeing, you know, having the pleasure of seeing his album chosen as one of these records, and, you know, he's a lovely guy to begin with. Or Matt Pusey from The Rain Parade, because that was number 11, actually.
Yeah.
And we see Third Rail Power Trip at number 11 for me. And when I put up Odyssey and Oracle, people were just flipping out because everyone loves that record. I mean, it's, you know, it's a perfect album. But it was the point of, you know, why did, you know, and you're sitting and you're thinking about this consciously, how you would, you know, numerically categorize them. And for me, the top 10 has pretty much been that solid for about 30 something years.
Yeah.
You know, it really hasn't changed dynamic at all. You know, Revolver, Sellout, number one record, Sound Effects, Murmur, Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones Limited, Drums Along the Hudson, Repercussion, Kilimanjaro, Piper at the Gates of Dawn. You know, it's always been my top 10, really. Number 11 happened to be Emergency Third Rail Power Trap. Number 12, I think, was 154 by Wire. 13, I think, was Hums of the Loving Spoonful. 14 was the second Small Faces album. Small Faces, not Small Faces, but Small Faces.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so on and so forth. The one that rounded it all up happened to have been Pet Sounds. There were no repetitions either, you know? It wasn't like two or three albums by the Beatles or two by the Who. What? No. There's your top 30. And it's a lot of fun. And it's also, I think it, to me, my interpretation of it was you get to see a lot of the person's genuine personality, I feel, by these albums. It kind of represents who you are as a person and also the stages of your life.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. And I mean, as you said, I mean, I could have gone off and done 30 or 40 of them in addition to the ones that I did. But it was fun to see because so many of the people who have become my friends over time did so because of one that I put up. And I didn't put them in any particular order either. I just put them up as, you know, one by one by one. But, you know, when it hit time to put Fizzy Fuzzy Big and Buzzy by the Refreshments up there, one of the first responses was from a buddy of mine that we used to hang out on the beach in Mexico and watch those guys play, who said, if you didn't put this album on this list, I would have punched you. So, you know, it's people take this stuff that seriously. But that's, see, when you talk about an album that has really had an effect on your life. I mean, 6 trips to Mexico or 8 trips to Mexico and, I don't know, 50 or 60 concerts later. Yeah, I'd say that album probably changed things a little bit for me, you know, following those guys all around the country. That's what it's about.
Right. That is the absolute beauty of it. And I think it tells a story about you. I mean, you know, for those who knew me, who I'm friends with, especially still on Facebook from high school, you know, they will certainly recognize Sound Effects. Or Murmur, because Murmur was the soundtrack of our graduation.
Right.
But certainly Kilimanjaro and Sound Effects, and then, you know, Repercussion and Drums Along the Hudson. You know, those were the albums of high school.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Revolver and Sellout. Revolver was an album of my childhood. So was Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn. Sellout is what got me here. You know, were it not for Sellout, I wouldn't have picked up a guitar. Period. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and with the only one that I put on, and I really had second thoughts about it because I didn't want to put a compilation or a best of on there, but I had to do it because when I was 16, I guess, or 15 probably, I got the double cassette of the Rolling Stones Hot Rock 64 to 71. And that was in my car without fail from the time that I had my own car until probably the tapes just got chewed up and spit out by the recorder, because it was just, that's what I listened to. That was my Rolling Stone soundtrack all through the latter stages of high school and into college.
Yeah, you know, if people have a problem with an exercise like this, it just tells me that they would rather just waste time on Facebook for bitching about things.
Exactly.
And preaching at you, which is a reason why I took so well to this particular exercise.
Yeah, it's just fun. And you never know. You may be able to inspire somebody to pick up an album they hadn't heard of before, and it can become a part of their experience too, which, as we've talked about before with our friends, the disc jockeys that were instrumental in making our lives what they were early on, that's what those guys were there for. They were there to show us, hey, here's some shit you haven't heard before, and it's great.
Well, what you just said rang true, because a perfect example was Dirty Looks.
Yes.
One friend said, I'm not familiar with them. Can you please tell me more about them? And I wrote just a little tiny blurb about it. And another friend said, you know, I've heard this name for years and I've seen pictures of the albums, but your description sounds like something I would really get into. And I said to him, I'm telling you, right, because I described them as the perfect 1-2 combination of The Jam and REM before REM ever came along.
Yeah.
You know, if you've turned somebody on in the course of doing this, you're doing a job really well.
Exactly. So with that, we get to the In Our Head segment. But yeah, play with that stuff on Facebook and have fun with it. That's what that stuff's there for. And if you can't find meaning in music, then there's something seriously psychologically wrong with you. But as I said, we're going to get away from music kind of in this In Our Head segment, although we may get back there anyway. Because I had the chance last night to hang around a little bit with Roy Wood Jr. And I've raved about this guy before during our get-togethers. He's correspondent for The Daily Show. He now hosts a couple of different shows on Comedy Central. And he has been for 20 years now out just hitting the bricks as a stand-up all across the country doing that bit. And told a story while he was on stage last night at the Funny Bone in St. Louis about playing early in his career, getting invited to do Showtime at the Apollo as a stand-up. And it was 5 minutes of some of the most gut-wrenching and yet riotously funny comedy. I mean, it was a story about getting booed off the stage by the Apollo crowd, and he talked about why that happens and what that scene is and what happened to a friend of his that almost knocked him out of comedy, you know, 20 years ago, and yet they're both still at it and still going. And it was brilliant. But after the show, we hung out for a little while at the Jazz and Blues Club next door and just talked. And it's great to see him do as well as he is. And I hate to make this sound like I'm name dropping, but he's one of the best people that's out there who has any degree of fame whatsoever. And it really does my heart good that he's doing as well as he is, because he's the kind of guy that deserves it, which brought me to ask him the question. Because I've had experiences with a couple of comics and a couple of performers, musical performers and things like that, who, if we were in the same room together in a room full of people, I would find a reason not to go over and talk to them because they're just not worth it. So I said, who is that for you? Now, he didn't give me permission to say what his answer was, but so I'm not going to, because it's not even really the point of the story. But he did say who, you know, that person was for him and why. And it's somebody who's relatively famous. In fact, he's very famous right now in comedy and on television and all of that. But he said, you know, this is the kind of guy that came from nothing and built a career, some of it through his own talent and some of it from just stealing shit from other people because he's a merciless thief. And he's the kind of guy that will keep a young comic off a bill if he doesn't like their suit. So it's clear that he has no connection left to what it was like to be young and struggling. And he said, I can't stomach that. And it was probably the best answer I've ever gotten to a question like that. So as you had spent so many years in the music business, Rob, and have had the opportunity to talk to hundreds or thousands of people who are performers of relative degrees of fame, who are the ones that you remember that you just think, you know what, here's a guy who just has no connection to anybody else in his own business? Because we think of these things as a brotherhood, and they really are. They should be. A rising tide lifts all boats, as you said earlier. And that's the way everybody should look at it. And I spent so many years in Nashville with songwriters who really lived that every day and did everything they could to help out people around them, even after they got famous, and still do. So there's no excuse to be that dickhead. And yet there's a thousand of them out there. So who are some of the ones that stick out in your mind that you remember that you think, you know what, I wish fame would leave this guy because he doesn't deserve it?
That's kind of a hard one to answer because I haven't had that much interaction with someone that I found so distasteful and dislikable that I thought to myself, ugh, you are – well, you know what? There is somebody who – there are two people actually, but it was a roundabout way. So if I might – it was both while I was at Atlantic Records. One was the singer of a very famous band. That was on our label at the time. The bandmates came into the office, and I was not a fan of this group when I got there. But the bandmates came in one day, and one of the fellas in the band walked over to my desk after just kind of smiling at me and saying, "Hey, how you doing?" Then he comes and goes, "Whoa, is that a Vespa on your desk? Because I used to have a metal Vespa."
Yeah.
And then he noticed that I had pictures of the Small Faces and stuff. He's like, "Holy shit, I got a Vespa back at my parents' place in New Jersey." We bonded immediately.
Sure.
And he and the guitar player from that band turned out to be two of the most fantastic people I've ever met. So it, by that alone, made me a champion of the band. But the singer of that band was not like them. He struck me. It wasn't a personal thing per se. But he was a complete prima donna and a complete asshole and completely unprofessional. And I just thought, ugh, they should just kick him out of the group.
Uh-huh.
You know? The other was a person who was signed to the label after having quite a successful first run at their career. They were signed even though they were definitely on a less than downside of the trajectory. a photo shoot had been booked in London. So our department head, along with one of the art directors, flew all the way to London. I forgot who the photographer was that was booked, but it was a photographer of name and note. And it was costing like $5,000 a day for the shoot because it was a 2-day shoot.
Yeah.
And this performer shined on them both days. Didn't show up, period.
Yeah.
I said, this is one of those moments where I will say, told you so. Because, you know, what you read about this person was not a lie. This person really was, in my opinion, a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Total non-professional. And I said, that person deserves to have their career go into the toilet.
Right. Well,
and subsequently it did. And every time you read about this person now, it's always really negative. So that's karmic justice being served.
It does. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you this much. You know, there have been a couple of people that I've spoken to that I would never want to talk to them again after having that one conversation, thinking, wow, you're a tool.
Yeah.
Wow, what a dick you are. You know, it's been very, 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 very rare. Few and far between, honestly. I've been very fortunate. You know, the people that I've met who just knocked me out with how unbelievably nice and kind and genuine and warm, you know, from George Carlin to Bette Midler to, you know, to Captain Sensible.
People who have nothing to gain from you and yet are still that nice a person.
And genuine and generous with their time.
Right.
You know,
right.
Paul Weller and so on and so forth. But there have been those moments where you talk to somebody and you go, you're a dick.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, one and done, really. I will relay a story that a friend of mine who is in a band of many years and of much great note, when we were talking, and just it wasn't an interview or anything, it was just a casual conversation. And he said, very matter-of-factly, you know, getting on stage after all these years and playing these songs is nothing. It's a joy. You know, hanging out and having drinks with you is a joy. You know, meeting the fans is a joy. The job factor is sitting for 5 hours on a flight with my drummer.
Yeah.
That says everything. That really does. So I can understand it because, you know, when you're in a band, you know, I could say if I wanted to be snide and snarky, well, I can tell you right away I can't stand my ex-bandmates, but that's not the case. You know, if you're looking back over why things went wrong, okay, fine, if you want to be that ridiculous about it, you know. It all depends on the individual, but again, I've been very fortunate. There haven't been too many people that I just thought were complete. Listen, people despise Kid Rock for any number of reasons. Every time I've ever met the man, he has been nothing but incredibly nice and very genuine and very warm.
Yeah.
You know, he would always come and sit down, hang out where I sat, you know, just hang out, talk for a while. There was none of this, you know, oh, I'm Kid Rock and I'm the big shit and, you know, ba da da ba and all that kind of crap. He was just a really nice guy.
That's cool. Yeah. And, you know, I look back over it and there have been a couple of times, Robbie Steinhardt, who played the violin break in Dust in the Wind, played for Kansas for many, many years. And he's one of the nicest human beings you will ever run across. And was, again, very generous with his time with me early on. And it grew into a great friendship over the years. But when Kansas came through, one of the times when he was with them, Steve Walsh had just rejoined the band, and it was a vibe thing more than anything else. I can't say that he did anything mean or nasty or anything like that, but I got a very sort of closed off, yeah, right, whatever sort of vibe out of him. You know, it's like we're just a couple of guys in a room talking, but I've got better things to do than deal with you. And that's fine, you know. And it may very well have been just that's the vibe he gives off to everybody, because I've heard the same thing from a lot of people. And it may not be him attempting to be a jerk. Some people are just shy. So I can't tell you, oh, Steve Walsh was a dick to me, because he wasn't. But there were other people in the room that I had a better time talking to. On the other hand, and I've made no secret about this over time, Tim Allen is an asshole. And he will, in my experience, it would take a lot for somebody to overtake his number one position in my list of famous assholes, because he, in things that he had promised to do, not only did he fail completely to do them, he ignored me on the way out and wouldn't even acknowledge my presence and was just a total prick. And the good thing about that is I have had that opinion also backed up by any number of people who have had to work with him.
It's definitely not, quote, you.
Right.
He's an asshole.
Right. And there is a difference, you know? Like you, and I know people are always interested. We talked about this. Who was it that did the bit about asking if? Oh, it was John Mulaney, who in his comedy special was talking about people asking him if Mick Jagger was a nice guy, and he's like, "No, he's not a nice guy. That's not what Mick Jagger is supposed to be." But people have that desire to know. You know, are famous people cool? And for the most part, overwhelmingly, the answer for me has been yes. In the times that I've had to do interviews and things like that and go out and actually meet some of these people, Sammy Hagar, nicest guy in the entire world.
It's like you and I've also talked about ad infinitum. You know, a lot of the musicians that we grew up with, when we've met them or have had the good fortune of meeting them, it's because we're not sitting there kissing their asses and looking upon them as demigods.
Right.
You know, when Page and Plant came up to Atlantic, you know, I had to open the door to let them in because the buzzer wasn't working. So we got the call downstairs that they were coming up. So I went over to greet them. They were both really lovely guys. It's like, yeah, hi, it's nice to meet you. Come on in. You know, just talking, you know, can I get you? No, please. You know, we're fine. We know where to find everything, blah, blah. Yeah, we're talking about Jimmy Page and Robert Plant.
If anybody had license to be an asshole, yeah, right.
But, or you know, effete, if you will, because they were stars of the old guard, you know. You know, Rod Stewart came in and didn't, you know, he had no vibe. So,
right. You know.
Bette Midler, on the other hand, just all of a sudden just burst in. You know, it's like this whirlwind comes in. It's like, your Aunt Bette's here, you know. And it's like, oh, my God, she's amazing.
Yes. And I would be disappointed if she were anything but that. So it's good to know.
Oh, so, you know, it's, but I was lucky. I got to work up there and get to see firsthand because you're sitting there in the crown jewel.
Right. But you know, because of that, there are so many people who have that potential of walking in like they own the place and going, okay, get me my latest whim and don't come back until you have it. And most people aren't like that, even if we would give them that kind of license to be.
I mean, we had somebody on the label at the time who was a big name for us, who sold a ton of records. But this was one of those – well, first of all, I couldn't have given a shit when I got there.
Yeah, right.
Because I didn't like this artist to begin with. So it didn't change my opinion. I had no interaction with her, but it was a female performer. But, you know, hers was one of those, you know, you may not look at her when addressing her if you must speak to her. Fuck you.
Yeah, right.
You're at my house now, bitch.
There you go. Well, Rob, we're going to leave it at that, man. And we're looking forward to our next conversation. We'll have plenty more hockey to talk about at that point. And again, go Tampa Bay. Hope they are able to pull that out in one of the next two games. And have yourself a brilliant week, my man.
You too, brother, and I will catch up with you next Sunday, and let's hope we've got nothing but good things to talk about.
You got that right.